thought maybe you're going to hit Jim.
Well, I was thinking about it.
We're honored today to have Representative Krupp with us, and as most people know, Representative Jeff Krupp, who's a farmer and also a broadcaster, took the time this last fall to go to Iraq with our crews, and I admire him for doing that, and I especially can identify with what he did, since I did the same thing many times in my 24 years with Evergreen International. He flew on one of our own Boeing 747s and moved right over there because we are flying regularly, and so that to me, I got to be a slight part of it. Same time, well, Brian Bocas too, because he had some time with Evergreen. So, Representative Krupp, thank you for making that risky trip and staying there with our troops. I know that meant a lot to them.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I have to assure you that it meant more to me than I can probably describe.
Okay, we now will open a public hearing on House Bill 3332. All right.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3332 has an amendment. The original bill authorizes the Public Employers Benefit Board to offer high deductible health insurance to members of the Oregon National Guard and their dependents the day before the date the members go on military leave. It requires the Oregon Military Department to pay a blank percent of the premiums and an amount equal to the minimum deductible into a health savings account. It appropriates a blank amount of general fund dollars for the National Guard health insurance program. Declares emergency takes effect July 1st, 2005. You have the Dash 1 amendment also from Representative Krupp that changes having the Oregon Military Department being the entity that offers the health insurance. It changes the eligibility to persons who are members of the Oregon National Guard on or after the effective date of the bill, and it sets the Oregon Military Department to share the premium payment at 66%.
Thank you, Mr. Administrator. Representative Krupp.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, House District 17, and I do appreciate the opportunity to share with you a few thoughts I have today that came out of my visit to Iraq and spending a lot of time chatting with troops and the issues that were important to them. And let me just preface this by saying I've never been a soldier, never been in a war zone until I went to Iraq. And so for me, it as anyone who enters into a war zone at any time for any reason, it does profoundly impact your thinking and your life, and you are never the same. For me, I began to understand how important that issue is to our soldiers, and how that, especially with the Guard and the Reserve, who are citizen soldiers, who then engage in long time frames away from their families, what that means to their families, and how going into a war zone not only changes soldiers, but it changes their families at the same time. And in listening to the concerns of various soldiers at many different moments where I sat and had discussions with them over meals, or times we held kind of mini little town hall meetings, just chatting with them about what it is that they felt was important to them and their families in regards to their Guard service. So I came home with a number of ideas about how to address that, and I've been very pleased with the response of so many in the legislature who have stepped up to the plate to recognize that the Oregon National Guard has made a tremendous sacrifice, and the sacrifices have been at a great cost. And I have felt that it is only right and only moral for us as a society, as a state, to say unto them, we appreciate and recognize the tremendous sacrifice that you have made on our behalf. And once you sit down and talk with these soldiers and understand how deeply impactful it is for them to be away from their families for 18 months, be able to fly home for 1 2-week time period during that time, once you understand the issues that become relevant in their life from being away from their families, being away from their jobs, Tonight we have a job fair, and I certainly want to invite all of you to be present later this afternoon as we have a demobilization ceremony for the two of the 162, which I was honored to visit. They have a job fair for them tonight, afterwards, and that's because 40% of them don't have jobs. Here they are living their lives like you and I. They have children, their lives, they have mortgages, some of them. Their lives are very complicated just like ours are, and they're ripped out of their lives, away from their families, and they go off to war. And when they come home, 40% of them don't have their jobs. It's not a very comforting thing. It's not comforting to their families, it's not comforting to them. That's why we have a job fair for them this evening. One of the things that profoundly impacts them, that as I listened to them talk about issues that were relevant to them, was this issue of not having health insurance. Roughly 25% of the Guard does not have health insurance where they work. I think this is an opportunity for us to address it as the legislative body. And the concept that I brought forward to you in House Bill 3332 authorizes the military department to offer higher deductible medical insurance plans with dental benefit. And I'll address the dental benefit in a moment. 25% of the Oregon National Guard, and if you have this small piece of paper that I left for you that summarizes the bill, 25% of the Guard currently don't have health care coverage. 50% of them don't have dental coverage. That needs to be remedied. And let me share with you why. Because when the two of the 162 was preparing for deployment, somewhere around the neighborhood, we deployed roughly 700 soldiers, slightly more than that. There were between 300 and 400 more soldiers that were not eligible to be deployed because of dental issues. And I found that shocking. And I learned that talking to the battalion commander and the XO in Baghdad and talking with them about why they couldn't have fielded more troops and why they needed to bring folks in from other units. And so that got me thinking about why is that? Well, it's largely because they don't have dental coverage. And so what this bill seeks to do is to remedy this situation only for members of the Guard who do not have health insurance available where they work. Now, I say the word available. Most folks today who work and have health insurance available to them usually have to participate in terms of the payment of those, making part of the premium payment. And at the same time, that is usually mandatory. And so there is a group of individuals who work for companies or work for themselves who simply do not have health insurance available to them because their employer doesn't offer it. I rode with a gunner on a Humvee on one of our combat patrols, a guy in his early 30 years of age who has an aircraft parts business out of the Malino Airport. And while he's gone, his mom is running his business. No health insurance. I think we can correct that. And we can do that by this particular concept here that I think is an emerging concept that you will see become more popular in America in the coming years. And that is the concepts of health savings accounts, which are a relatively new phenomenon that came out of the Medicaid prescription drug bill that Congress passed and the President signed into law last year. What we're talking about here is a higher deductible policy of which the Oregon Military Department, and that again, your committee administrator clearly articulated the Dash 1 Amendment. Originally, we thought the Public Employees Benefit Board would be proper to administer that. They would rather not, and so we then changed that to the Oregon Military Department. They could go out to an RFP, much as we do on the Public Employees Benefit Board, for someone to offer those services. The high deductible account of which the Oregon National Guard member would pay one-third of the monthly premium. The state would pay the other two-thirds. And then the state would put, as in accordance with the rules of health savings accounts, the state would put the entire deductible amount every year into the Oregon National Guardsman's health savings account. That allows the guardsmen to utilize that money at their discretion for their family with a fee-for-service plan. This is not an HMO plan. They can choose whichever family doctor to obtain services from, or dentist for that matter. It empowers the Oregon National Guardsmen to choose their own medical care in a more careful and a thoughtful way. If that money is not used in its entirety to satisfy their deductible in a year, they can, again, in accordance with the rules of health savings accounts, they can roll that over into the following year. In fact, it can roll on for a number of years and create a very substantial, potentially health savings account for their later years of life. It's a great concept, and I think that we should explore it. And it satisfies the need of 25% of the Oregon National Guard that don't have health insurance, 50% that don't have dental insurance. So it doesn't have a fiscal statement yet. It will be expensive. I'm going to make no bones about that. And this is a difficult budget environment with which to put this into play. But I will share with you that freedom is not cheap, either in blood or in money. And these men and women have fought for freedom. And I think we owe them something. And this will not be inexpensive, but I think it is a very worthwhile expenditure. There are many needs that Oregonians are asking us to meet in this particular budget period. I understand that. We need to prioritize this a little higher in my mind. The Oregon National Guard suffered the highest rate of loss of life as a percentage of troops deployed and of injury of any other National Guard unit. We rank almost in the lowest of all state National Guards in terms of overall benefits. We know that's true. The governor's recognized that. You've recognized that. That's why there's been 90 bills introduced for the benefit of the Oregon National Guard. People recognize that. People recognize that we must do something different to remedy that, what I think is a wrong equation, and bring it back into balance. This is one of the ways that we can do that. So for the future of the Guard, for the future of the health of our guardsmen, I would ask you to very seriously and carefully consider this proposal, and I would ask you to pass it forward. It will have to go to Ways and Means, as you well know, or I will have to fight for every penny to make this a reality for our guardsmen. It is our way of saying thank you for the tremendous sacrifice they've made on our behalf, and for that of the Iraqi and the Afghan people, for that matter. And likely, this war on terrorism will continue for some time, perhaps in other locales across the world that our guardsmen may be involved in and we may never hear about it. We need to retain qualified, dedicated people. And this is one way that we can do that. Because, as you know, it is likely that many of the members of the 2 of the 162 will not reenlist because of the hardship this has created on their families. I sat many times and asked that question as I was having meals with guardsmen. And typically 60 or 70% of the guys I was sitting with would say, I'm not going to reenlist again. And it's because they feel they're not valued many times, and because they know they have very low benefits. We can help remedy that. You can help us do that. And I would implore you, would ask you to do that today. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Krupp, and I want to go on the record as the co-sponsor of this bill, and so that there's no question that I'm certainly supportive of this program. A couple questions that we have here, or I have. Representative Krupp, if you'll look at lines 9 and 10, prior to your coming, we discussed some issues regarding our troops, which I tend to want to bring out because we're on the air, and things we're not happy with in the way our troops are treated. But line 9 says this bill, well, first of all, we're going to take out the public employees' benefit board. We know that now. But anyway, on down it says, shall offer a qualified high deductible, I don't even think you have to put high deductible health benefit high in there, just a health plan, period, to members of the Oregon Guard and dependents of members of the Oregon National Guard who do not have coverage under an employer-sponsored health benefit plan on the day before the date the member goes on military leave. And so, first of all, if it's all right with you, we're going to wordsmith this so it doesn't say goes on military leave, because it has several different connotations, as if, you know, going home for parental leave or some other issues like that. And to change that to relate to combat requirement deployment, if that's all right.
Madam Chair, I thank you for that observation. It is one that I had anticipated we would probably need to change also, and I think it's a very appropriate change.
And then second, on that same issue, what we just found is, and we're grateful to the businesses that employ our guard. I want to be sure that is on the record. However, what we've just talked about prior to your coming is individuals who thought they had a job and come back and don't. So we have a little challenge here because it says who do not have coverage the day before. Well, many of them had coverage the day before they left, but now they're back. And we just discussed three here today before you came in, that City of Salem, a school district, and somebody else. These poor people, you know, were treated despicably and so do not have benefits. They have, probably have COBRA in a couple of cases, maybe, for a little while. What is that, 90 days?
I don't know. Was that an acronym?
Oh, your God.
I'm sorry.
She is, okay. I don't even know what it stands for.
I'm sorry.
Can anybody help me?
Okay.
Yes, you are required by law to have that now.
Unfortunately, none of us remember what COBRA stands for.
Oh, ask him.
Yeah.
COBRA, you just said it.
Yeah.
It's a dollar.
Yeah. None
okay.
of us remember what it stands.
All right. We contribute to the Veterans Fund, Representative Krupp, when you use an acronym, in case you don't know. And we leave you on your best behavior to remember that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's hard for me to behave.
Okay. $100 be fine. Anyway, we're going to have to rework that because it doesn't fit anymore. They can have coverage, you know, before they left. And what we're trying to do is be sure when they come back, they're going to be protected. And once they leave Title 10, and they're not. So if that's okay, we'll get with you and work on
that. Yes, Madam Chair, I would happily accept that. Again, for the record, the intent of this legislation is to provide health insurance and dental insurance coverage for guardsmen who do not have it. And it would be my intent that that would be extended to them from the moment that they are demobilized or are no longer eligible for TRICARE, which I think is sometime after their demobilization, Madam Chair.
You may not know this, but for the 3670th, when they left Clackamas, we were alerted of a new federal deal. Unfortunately, if you're not notified you're going to be deployed early enough, you wouldn't know you had the benefit. But now, 90 days prior to mobilization, our troops and their families are protected health-wise. They can have their teeth filled. They can have root canals for 90 days health benefits. And that also extends for a period when they come back. Unfortunately, all of these women and men left for Fort Hood or wherever they went for 2 months without having known that because we didn't get the notice soon enough. They're now trying to catch up with them. So we do have that temporary fix. To some degree. But the one thing that's missing, and I'm for parity, and I think that's a good six-letter word. And for mental health, we seem to have a gap in our benefits. So it says must include dental. I'm hoping that we can also require mental health parity.
Madam Chair, a great point, and let me, first of all, before I address that, again, for the record, state that, this is not only for soldiers who are being demobilized. These are for Oregon National Guardsmen who are, from any time that they are enlisted, would be eligible for health insurance. The issue you're speaking to is one that I heard about a lot, actually, in Iraq. From soldiers, and so I wanted to address that particular piece of it. Most of the health insurance plans, most of, I would say, do have currently, even the higher deductible plans, currently have counseling services available to them, or already part of those plans. And it would, again, be my intent that any plan that the Oregon National Guard would approve under this legislation would include counseling benefits if they are not certainly as a backstop to any counseling benefits that would not be available from the federal government. And in regards to that, I'm going to propose, Madam Chair,
rehabilitative. Also, we may have counseling,
okay,
but there are no programs paid for rehabilitation.
Madam Chair, I'm perfectly willing to articulate that. If that's the pleasure of the committee, I'm fine with that. Let me say that I think that I would like us to move forward from here by establishing a very short duration work group, Oregon National Guard and insurance professionals, to explore the actual semantics of how the Oregon National Guard would put into place an RFP and actually conduct this should this become law.
Okay. Can we call Colonel Caldwell to join us, please? Yes, Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. Representative Krupp, I take it from what you just said that what your intention with this bill is that when a young man or young woman joins the Guard and they're employed at a place that doesn't offer insurance, they at that moment become eligible for this coverage.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Barnhart, you are quite correct.
And they would continue to be eligible for this coverage until TRICARE took over. And when TRICARE ended, they would begin to be eligible for this coverage, so long as they remained in the Guard. Is that what your intention is?
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Barnhart, that is correct.
Thank you.
Colonel Caldwell, would you please identify yourself?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department.
And could you tell us, are the Oregon Guard soldiers part of the state health system when they're in the National Guard?
Madam Chair, no, they're not.
And why not?
Madam Chair, the legislature nor any subsequent administration that I'm aware of has felt that was a necessary thing over the years. So it's never been considered. To my knowledge, I've been doing this since 1988. So in my 17 years, this has never come up as an issue with respect to the state. It's been an issue with the federal government for some time. I can tell you the National Guard Association of the United States has lobbied for at least a decade. Reserve Officers Association, which represents other reserve components, have also lobbied Congress very diligently over the last decade to try to get these health care benefit packages, dental care and health care, to Guard and reservists who do not have that coverage. It's become more pronounced and more acute effort in the last 4 years, particularly since 911 occurred and the call-ups started becoming routine instead of unusual. Actually, in 95 is when we started being called pretty regularly. And it kind of got the ramp up at the federal level to try to get some additional TRICARE benefits. The Congress has passed several pieces of legislation in 2004, the 2004 fiscal year. Congress directed the Department of Defense to do 1 year pilot to cover all Guard and reservists in the TRICARE system. The Department of Defense elected not to execute that directive, and it never occurred. Last Congress, for fiscal year 2005, Congress then again directed the Department of Defense to extend coverage beyond what they were at that point, which was simply upon mobilization. That's part of what you talked about earlier, the 90-day extension, and also Congress then subsequently in a supplemental added the portion, the provision that allowed TRICARE to go 6 months past the end of the deployment. So incrementally, you can see that Congress has been adding these phases. Representative Krupp is absolutely correct with respect to about 25% of the Guard and Reserve nationwide do not fall under any form of coverage. And that is a significant issue when it comes to readiness in our mind. As he indicated, there was a good number of people who have drilled for years with that particular unit that was mobilized, 2162. They were non-capable. We were not able to mobilize them. And a good number of them had dental problems. And all we're allowed to do by congressional rule and National Guard Bureau with our dentists, we have dentists on staff, is to do exams and document the individual's particular needs. We cannot do any repair. We cannot do any assistance, and then encourage the soldier to go get dental care on the civilian market. They have no dental insurance. It just doesn't happen. So there are some very huge gaps, and it does cause a readiness issue, and I think, as well as the good representative has indicated, it's probably a retention issue. Having said all that, I would tell you that I think primarily it's a federal responsibility. They've elected not to take that responsibility on, in my mind, and perhaps maybe actions and efforts, as this committee is try to do in many different fronts, and representatives such as Mr. Krupp pushing the Congress to do the right thing here. This may be part of that. From a departmental standpoint, I'm obligated. It's not in our budget. This bill would we have no idea what the fiscal would be. We would have to say that we can't support it on that basis. From if I change hats and go to a civilian, Mike Caldwell, I would tell you that it's a necessary thing for guardsmen to have this kind of coverage or some sort of coverage for retention and for their own good order and discipline, so we can do the missions that the people expect us to be able to do.
Colonel Caldwell, are soldiers a part of the PERS system?
Madam Chair, they are not. They are covered under a federal retirement program.
Madam Chair, let me try and add a kink and an assistance in both of this.
Representative Boquist, could you just give us assistance with the kink?
Well, I guess the first statement, Madam Chair, is almost a question to yourself and the other chief co-sponsor, and that is that there are 2,600 Oregon reservists serving in Army, Navy, Marines, so on and so forth. 600 of them are boots on the ground in Iraq as we speak today. That aren't covered by this bill, and they are Oregon citizens and deserve to be covered from the bill. So
they have no federal other benefits.
I'll get to that.
Oh, okay.
Because there's been a change in the last 5 days. I might even, for once, be able to front Colonel Caldwell there.
Probably.
So the total reserve component is 10,682 in the state that we're talking about, not just the 8,000 National Guards that have this problem that, in a case of equity, we need to address. The second thing is, in the last 5 days, the Pentagon, not out of the goodness of their heart, but out of retention issues, has announced and funded a subsidy program to extend TRICARE out upwards of 8 years for a reserve component soldiers. And they have actually put money against that.
All right.
To implement that program. However,
for 8 years?
Correct, ma'am, but just verbiage. Subsidy program. Beyond at the six-month mark, what they're saying is that the reserve component soldier may purchase discounted, with a discounted premium, TRICARE, TriWest insurance, which may be, you know, one of those issues if we look at something like this bill and say that maybe what we can do is help subsidize their payment, because it is a co-payment from the reserve soldier, which would provide us access to at least maybe something we can get that has a fiscal impact in the state of Oregon we can live with that is also subsidized by the federal government. Again, it is a co-payment. They must sign up and purchase it as they go through. But it is subsidized about a third by the federal government. And so, therefore, that may be an option, given the fiscal realities of this state at this point, that we may be able to at least do something. But I think the two key points is that there is an existing program out there we might be able to have as an option, and we still have 2,600 other reservists, 600 of them in Iraq as we speak now. Your comments, Madam Chair, and Representative Krupp.
Okay, so Representative Boquist, Congress just passed this measure, or DOD.
DOD did it, and they're using supplemental funds at this point, and they've asked Congress to do it.
To fund.
In the next budget cycle.
So when is that?
October.
October. But, Madam Chair, again, they've already put money up into it. They put $90 million right off the bat with a reprogram of another 300 and some odd million, and now they're going to Congress in the existing supplemental that's being argued right now.
Madam Chair, let me state that actually I was going to bring up the point of, and I'm glad Colonel Caldwell is here, I would like to be able to include the reserve in as many of the pieces of legislation that will be of mine that will be before this committee as where it is practical. I do not know the semantics of how, in the context of my legislation, of how the payment of dollars through the Oregon Military Department to reserve for a benefit. I don't know how that works, and that's one of the.
We have that problem in another bill.
Okay,
so.
All right. So if you're addressing that issue, I am, for the record, I am more than willing to add in the reserve to as many of the pieces of legislation, this particular bill and House Bill 3333, which we'll be talking about in a bit. For the record, I am very amenable to that. I think that's an outstanding idea. Same issue that Representative Boquist has articulated, I've recognized also in conversation with reserve soldiers. So I'm fully in favor of it, ma'am.
I'm going to ask our good administrator to bring in the insurance world and let's see what type of plans our own state, Blue Cross, whatever, Regents, whatever, already offers the other state employees. Why they're discriminating against our military makes me sick. And let's find out what kind of a benefit plan they could offer. Let's call TRICARE and see if we can be a part of a group plan. And I did get a letter from the head of that program. The chief of the chiefs, he was thrilled. We invited him here, and he said, call me and I'll come.
He's coming on the 28th of April.
Well, that's too late.
That's as soon as he could get here.
Not good enough.
Madam Chair, just to a final point in terms of my comments to you on this issue. I serve on a small fire board of a very small fire department, Sublimity Fire. We have two paid employees, and we just put both of them about 4 or 5 months ago on a health savings account plan. We were paying for a very small deductible plan, and we saved money by going to a high deductible plan with an HSA, and that includes putting, and we're paying the entire premium, by the way, still, as a fire department. We saved money over the premium even with putting their full deductible amount, and we have a $1,500 a year deductible, into their account on their behalf. We still saved money as a fire department. Our employees are happier. Because, again, they are empowered to make their own health decisions. They're not part of an HMO. It's total fee for service. They're very pleased. And I think, again, that this is a proper and a good direction for us to go. I would ask you to keep the words high deductible in there or higher or something of that to clearly express the intent that this be a program that fits nicely within the rules of health savings accounts.
We will certainly consider that. Representative Barnhart.
Thank you. I've got three points or three questions, I guess. The first one is for Colonel Caldwell. I'm assuming, and I'd like your thoughts about this, this kind of proposal that Representative Krupp is talking about has the potential for being a very important retention issue, does it not?
Madam Chair, Representative Barnhart, I believe it would be a huge
It would be a huge issue.
Yes.
Some of those 70% that he was talking about would change their minds, wouldn't they?
Yes, sir, I do believe that would be the case.
Yeah. And then the next one, I guess, is for Representative Boquist. Reserve component, does that include the National Guard?
Yes.
Okay. And the third point, unfortunately, Madam Chair, the relating clause on this bill isn't going to work, I don't believe. Fortunately, we've got lots of other vehicles. But this particular relating clause, this looks like it's aimed at something else.
Why?
And I just note that.
Why?
Well, because Representative Krupp is talking about a proposal that would cover all guardsmen, not just those who are active.
But if they're guardsmen, they are active.
Okay, well,
it doesn't say going into combat.
If we use the term active to mean a member of the Guard,
it is.
Then it's okay.
Otherwise, they're retired.
I got you.
Okay,
all right. Cool.
All right.
And Madam Chair, one last comment to Representative Barnhart's point. The Guard, as you know, is being told, at least currently, that they can expect to be deployed once every 5 years. So if you are a young man leaving high school and you have an opportunity to enlist in the Oregon National Guard, you're looking for a number of things. And a lot of the soldiers I talked to were looking for educational benefits. This is a different mission now that they are being told that they are going to be engaged.
Today for our next bill.
I'm sure. And so that's why I would echo the Colonel's comments. It is a powerful tool to help with retention, especially of individuals who are seriously considering not reenlisting, who have been deployed for 18 months, especially for those who do not have health care. Don't have a job right now, that 40%. I can guarantee you this will make a powerful impression in their lives, because about half of the 2,000 guardsmen we estimate in Oregon that don't have health insurance have dependents, wives and children. And this will be important to them. For the younger members who aren't married yet, who are college students, the ability to use an HSA, because they're likely not going to utilize their entire deductible for many years in any given year, because they're younger and their health is generally better. This allows them to build quite a substantial nest egg for their later years of life, when that may be necessary for them with continued care when they're old. It is another powerful motivator for them also. And again, I think that's why this is an idea that's worthy of your consideration and ask you to move forward.
Representative Krupp, when I saw some of the soldiers last Friday as they came back to Salem, I told the group on the committee on Tuesday, I forgot how young they were.
Yeah.
And then Tuesday we had two young men who just back, and Colonel Caldwell brought them and their leader, I believe, in. And I mean, younger than my boys, and I forget how young these people are. And you're right, that would be a great nest egg for the future. Colonel Caldwell, does the Adjutant General have an insurance policy?
Madam Chair, yes. The Adjutant General is a state employee, so as a state employee, they would fall under the same programs that are offered to all state employees through the PEB. Public Employees Benefit Board.
Yeah.
So
what level does that go in the Guard? In the military?
Madam Chair, it only goes to those that are classified as a standard state employee, which you would go then to our budget. And as I testified earlier in the committee, right now we have 43 generally funded employees out of the 2,100 full-time employees in the Oregon Guard. 43 of them are generally funded. Another 500 are paid with federal funds as state employees. So that 543 employees, it falls under that. The other 1,600 are federal employees working. They work for the governor, they work for the Adjutant General, but they're paid, retired, and health cared under the federal government. We have a very unique situation in our department. I don't think there's any other department in the state that has the combination of federal-state mix that we do. So it becomes rather interesting when it comes to budgets and other items.
I guess I'm also going to be interested in knowing, and maybe Director Willis will know that, is our other safety officials, you know, what kind of benefits do they have? Our state police, our...
They would all fall under the
fire.
Public Employees Benefit Board program. Yes, ma'am.
I don't know why we're not. I mean, aren't we all in it for safety? Isn't that the whole purpose? Isn't that our top priority?
Yes, ma'am,
so
but
why would we exempt some and say it's fine for them to go fight fires and have no insurance and but the others can't?
Madam Chair, I would suggest that throughout the, again, my 35 years in this organization and last 17 of them I've been working full-time, there's been no question that the federal government has picked up the lion's share of the cost associated with the National Guard. And I think in respect with respect to that, it's viewed as a temporary position because most of them are 2 days a month, 2 weeks a year in the traditional Guard setting, reserve setting. I think what Representative Krupp is indicating here has been to an extent, benign neglect by the Congress and probably to some extent the legislature over the last 50 years. It certainly hasn't been that big of an issue until, I think, as we finished World War III or the Cold War, however you want to term it, and started into the new war, World War IV, the War on Terror, to where the Guard was being deployed to the extent that it is today. And I think that's opened up a whole new set of questions and a whole new set of examinations by the elected leaders. So I would suggest that there was no preeminent demand for this kind of thing with respect to the temporary as we have been or part-time military component. I think, if I might add...
This reminds me of another issue that has offended me for as long as I've been in the legislature, and that relates to hepatitis for our firemen. I mean, that whole program that we won't cover them. And I'm thinking, my gosh, here we expect them to be in those circumstances. So here's the fireman sitting beside you. I fought for it with now Commissioner Leonard in my first session. And, I mean, some of these things are such an enigma to me, just like this one. How could this be? How could this have existed and, you know, and I not know it until now? But thank God for this committee because we can do something and with a governor who's going to support us, I hope.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I certainly wouldn't presuppose what the governor will or won't do, but I would suggest that much of what this committee, I mean, everything that I've seen over the past several months of this committee has been eye-opening, I think, to a lot of people. Certainly, we've been living with it, and I think this is good to get exposure on these issues. And Representative Krupp's one-on-one meetings with soldiers in the field in a combat zone, I think, has brought even better focus to some of these issues, and I applaud him and this committee for their work. However, I must caution the committee. I mean, I'm going to be real honest and frank with you today. As we speak of all these wonderful things that we want to do for the Guard and the Reserve and the veterans, as Representative Boquist has indicated, there's a finite amount of money. This week, as we are talking about these bills and other bills we'll talk about today, that certainly do add benefit and value to the Guard, and certainly as a Guardsman, I appreciate that. At the same token, I'm being told that I go back to my office, look at my 100 and some odd emails daily, and sitting there last night about 7 o'clock looking at this, here's an email from Legislative Fiscal Office telling us to, in a sense, rearrange the deck furniture on the Titanic and move costs that are associated with operation of armories that are the fundamental infrastructure of our organization to the other fund category, which in essence is a smoke and mirrors move to just simply not fund it. And I can tell you our budget that we have, that the governor's approved, takes care of that basic infrastructure, not in a Cadillac version, but a very, you know, used car rent-a-wreck version. And plus, he's added $700,000 to add some enhancements. You know, I can't honestly sit here and say, as much as I would love to see a bill like this, and as much as I know the need is out there, and yes, Representative Boquist did surprise me with that other thing that the Congress is doing. I can't sit here and honestly tell you you should do this when I know full well that I'm going to have difficulty in 2 weeks down here at Ways and Means trying to figure out how I'm going to keep the lights on in armories. So,
Colonel Caldwell, we're going to be there for you.
Well, I appreciate that, Madam Chair, but I think, you know, we, as much as I would love to jump on this and say this is what we need to do, I think realistically we've got to look at what we can afford to do. And I know what the most fundamental thing for a guardsman is being able to have an armory that they can come to and feel good about coming to that armory and know that the lights will be on and we're not putting garbage cans out to catch water leaking through the roof, which we do quite occasionally.
Well, Colonel Caldwell, if at all possible, you know, we're going to get some of that money that is not necessary for those bridges.
Okay.
So that you can hit now in the Oregon Department of Transportation so that we can have some construction costs for other types of construction.
Well, I appreciate this committee's work.
We've asked for $4.5 million.
Thank you, ma'am.
The other question, and it's been changed, line 19 in this bill and 26, it's... on or after the effective date of this 2005 Act, people who enter into active federal service before, and I just thought we don't need that.
Madam Chair, the Dash 1 Amendment eliminates that entire section and replaces it with verbiage that says Section 1 of this 2005 Act applies to any person who is or becomes a member of the Oregon National Guard on or after the effective date of this 2005 Act, which basically means
well
their enlistment period.
Well, any other questions, Representative Hunt?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for bringing this forward. I appreciate both the intent and the value it would lend. And also really do appreciate Colonel Caldwell continuing to remind us that we don't want to raise expectations for guard members and potential guard members unduly high. We want to raise their expectations appropriately high. A couple questions, probably both for Representative Krupp. In terms of not going with Public Employee Benefits Board, I understood you to say that was really at their request. Is your conclusion, I mean, I realize that they may have indicated it's not at their request, is your conclusion that it could be done more cost-effectively through them, even if they would prefer not to have it, as opposed to setting up an infrastructure that may not be in place at the military department?
A great question, Madam Chair and Representative Hunt. No. The reason that the Public Employees Benefit Board chose to not want to participate in this is it does not fit within their stated goals of the types of programs they want to offer. They don't feel that at this time they want to embrace the concept of health savings accounts. So the reason that I had originally drafted this legislation for the Public Employees Benefit Board is I've sat on that board for 6 years now as a non-voting legislative member, pretty much in an advisory capacity, and they are the organization that goes out and purchases health coverage for about 120,000 dependents of and all of our state employees and others, other municipalities and other governments. So it was my intention that they had the mechanisms and the individuals on staff who are familiar with health insurance programs and the machinations that goes along with that. The military, since they've indicated clearly that they would prefer not to be involved, we then drafted the Dash 1 Amendment to allow the Oregon Military Department to assume that role. And that is why I'm asking you to put together a work group so that we can figure out how to make that work in terms of the physical machinations you have to engage in at the military department's level. This is not something they've done before, and I think it would be helpful if we all sat down together, figured out how we could make it work before we go much further.
Yes, sir.
And thank you, Madam Chair. One second question. In your bill, you basically have a 2-to-1. The state would pick up 2/3 the cost. The guards members would pick up 1/3. Anything special about why you chose that versus 50-50 or 80-20?
Another great question, Madam Chair and Representative Hunt. The reason I did that was basically sort of playing off of the business models that I'm aware of, various businesses that I have chatted with who have similar type programs. It's typically a third employee, some are as low as 25% employee contribution to the monthly premium cost. Some are actually a little higher, but I kind of took an average of one-third, two-thirds.
Would you have a different recommendation, Representative Hunt?
No, I mean, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm familiar with some. A lot of federal plans are more of an 80-20, where 80% is picked up by the government. That obviously increases the fiscal, so that may decrease the odds of making it happen. I accept Representative Krupp's answer. I just you answered what the base reason for it was.
Representative Comp, what do school districts do?
As far as insurance benefits, it's changing constantly.
What's kind of a typical arrangement for the employees?
Sometimes it's 50-50.
Madam Chair, I don't believe there is a typical arrangement.
Well, I don't want to just know all over the board. I know that. Yeah. I just want to know what you think the majority do.
It is done by bargaining.
Oh, I know that.
And,
yeah.
And
I know that. I just was curious. Is it 50-50, 80-20? So 50-50 is good enough for me.
But it goes down to, to the point of 80-22. So there's a wide range depending upon your community and your school board.
Mm-hmm. And your contract.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Any other questions?
Madam Chair, one parting comment from me regarding this legislation. Many of our soldiers are going to be young that will replace those who will be retiring or choosing not to reenlist. But also I have to share with you meeting Corporal Riley King in Baghdad at the forward operating base. Notice I didn't say FOB.
Yes, I noticed that.
$100 for you.
Yes. I'm a very frugal person.
We'll take ears of corn.
Corporal King is 60 years old. I met a number of guardsmen who were in their 50s. I met another gentleman, I can't remember his first name, his last name was Calhoun, who was also 60 years old, which is mandatory retirement in the Guard. Corporal King is quite an interesting gentleman. He was a Vietnam veteran, combat veteran, who survived all 10 charges up Hamburger Hill, if you're familiar with that particular event. He's a very humble man, but yet he straps on a gun and the same Kevlar vest and helmet that I wore every day, and he puts himself in harm's way. I had one gunner on one of our combat patrols who was 55 years old, grandfather. Now, gunners on top of up-armored Humvees are the first person people that sadly die when a roadside bomb goes off. Here's a 55-year-old grandfather putting on a gun, exposing himself to certain death, and willing to do that at our behalf. Pretty impressive to me.
Absolutely.
And for their sake and their family's sakes, I hope that we're able to do substantive policy changes on their behalf on a whole host of range of issues, and I hope that you're helpful, and I hope that you will look favorably on this particular bill. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Representative Krupp, for all you're doing, advocating for our military and our veterans. Thank you for what you do in the firefighting activities. Would it bother you at this time if we didn't go into the next bill that you sponsored so we could go to another one and call you back? Would that be acceptable? Okay. And thank you so much. I will now close the public hearing on House Bill HB 3332 and open a public hearing on House Joint Resolution 34.
Madam Chair, House Joint Resolution 34 is a proposal to change the Constitution upon approval by voters of the November 2006 general election, amends the Oregon Constitution, include the provision of services to Oregon veterans among the uses of proceeds from the state lottery. It requires 1.5% of the net lottery proceeds to be deposited in a veterans benefit fund for the purpose of funding county veteran service officers, rehabilitation of injured soldiers, and scholarships for Oregon veterans. It reduces from 15% to 13.5% the portion of state lottery proceeds that is going to be deposited in the Parks and Natural Resources Fund.
Thank you, Mr. Stembridge, and I will call up the individual on whose behalf or who helped us initiate this bill. And Representative Bokus, do you plan to testify also?
I'll have comments after.
Okay.
After Lindsay.
Commissioner John Lindsay, if you'd come forward from Linn County.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. I didn't get my voicemail until yesterday afternoon that this was going to be heard this morning. So.
Doesn't matter. We're just lucky it's getting heard.
So I didn't really have any too much prepared information or text or anything to that regard.
Tell us why you think this is important.
Well,
did you identify yourself? I can't remember.
John Lindsay. I'm a Linn County Commissioner. Reside in Lebanon, Oregon. There's kind of a couple of fold, shall I say, reason why I felt that it was time to go forward with something like this. And it's, you could say that it's a culmination of years of observation, is how I kind of look at different things. I know that you cannot come in front of any body in front of this legislature with an idea unless you have a way to finance it. And so that's why I brought this forward, is that budgetarily, if we examine the monies that are involved here, we know that there's running surpluses in other accounts and have had a long-term, a rather long lengthy history of that. And yes, I've read lots of audit reports and different things like that. But I guess the main thrust here is a conversation that I had about 6 months ago with an individual out of the B-52 engineering company that came back from Iraq. Being serving several years on active duty myself, I know that we used to have a term that the military takes care of its own. And a lot of active duty, full-time military personnel, understand that. Later on, when I was discharged from the service, I became a member of the B-52s, which eventually left. I left rather because I found out that, you know, a lot of people don't really care about the Guard. And they're treated differently. Whereupon I tried to get back into the Naval Reserve, but budget cuts during the 90s blocked me from doing that. The conversation I had with this gentleman that came back from the B-52s, he had been decorated. He also had a Purple Heart. He had been wounded in the backside. Through a weird comedy of errors, the way I would refer to it, he was discharged back into the Oregon National Guard, which took him off the full-time Army military payroll and switched him back to the state of Oregon. Now, myself, I get treatment every now and then.
Voluntarily? Or not involuntarily? He was moved from one to the National Guard.
Madam Chair, there's a point I want to make here, and that is this individual did not know what he was getting into when he did that.
But when what service was he in?
He's part of the B-52 Engineering Battalion, Oregon National Guard.
Okay, but you said he was moved back to the Guard from what?
When they returned from Iraq, your status changes. You're no longer
into routine drill duty.
Say if you had a severe injury and you were put in Walter Reed Medical Center, you're not going to be quote discharged until you're made whole. Okay, or removed back, reassigned, I guess, is what I should be saying. Reassigned back to whatever. Now, myself, I occasionally have to go to the Oregon Department of Veterans Hospital up in Portland. What I was amazed, what he explained to me is he's not considered a veteran. In the eyes of the Federal Veterans Hospital. So he has to receive further treatment. Being injured in the backside, he has to drive to Washington State to the Army hospital up there to receive treatment. Now, picture this. Someone's injured, shall we say, on the backside. They have to get in a car and drive for 5 miles to receive therapy, 5 hours, receive therapy, then sit on the injury again and drive 5 hours the other direction. What is kind of the point there? When it could have been a two-hour drive to the VA hospital or clinic, there's two different ways you can be treated up there. But this individual can't. So, you know, I decided at that point there's something that we need to do about this because these people are being treated very differently than other military people or under a different impression than they should have been. These are individuals that really don't ask for anything, and I'm sure this committee has heard this. A lot of veterans don't really ask for much. They only ask, you know, occasionally to be treated with some amount of fairness. Now, the following day after hearing this story, which had pumped up my blood pressure a little bit, but I got some sleep that night anyway, I go back into work in my day job, which is a county commissioner, and I have to read through crime reports. And I guess what disturbed me the most was is that we can take someone who is illegally dealing drugs, who is illegally in this country, and we can arrest that individual, and they will receive immediate medical care at taxpayer expense. And that is where I just went nuts, because in my day job, I have to pay those bills. That's part of our budgeting process. And I'm sure that many of the members here sit on other committees and have heard of indigent defense and medical care and jails and things like that. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, we treat criminals better than we do the Oregon National Guard.
Absolutely.
On these issues.
No question.
And so at that point, I'm sitting here going, there has got to be a way we can try and help alleviate some of the difficulties that these individuals are facing. For years, I have been a little bit critical about expenditures in some accounts that were referring to the referral that we're discussing here. That the original budget estimates that are not matching the current dollar values. Actually, it's nearly twice what the estimates were, and that's why a lot of that money's not spent. There's so much money there that, quite frankly, we can't spend it. That's why Oregon is purchasing lots of land, even though local jurisdictions don't want them to, or different things like this. And so I was figuring, if we can take a minor piece of that money and put it into a predictable account to help these individuals, then we would have done something right. But more importantly, let's let the voters of the state decide that and decide what is important to them. There are somewhere around 360,000 veterans in the state. So when you sit down and you think about the number of adults in this state, it is very hard to find an individual who does not have a spouse, immediate family member, or at least an extended family member that is currently serving or has served on active duty in the military and understands what they go through. Madam Chair, the second issue that I would like to address on how some of this is written up and why I did that was the issue of veteran service officers. I want to give you an example of how personally important this is to me. My brother-in-law is a Vietnam veteran who went through all sorts of medical hardships through the 90s in regards to what the doctors would say an oddity of a cancer, right? And every other year he was told he wouldn't live. You know, he was going to end up dying. They can treat what they can. And I had a discussion with him, and I said, why haven't you gone through or talked to a veteran service officer? And he goes, he had been disillusioned by years of being treated for post-traumatic stress, and he didn't want to deal with that anymore. And I go, well, go to a county service veteran officer and see what happened. Well, he did that about 5 or 6 years ago. And you know what? He's not the same guy. He's not alone in that particular cancer, because when you have a veteran service officer that takes an interest in an individual, they will track down facts and they will find things out. And lo and behold, they find out that in Oregon, There just happens to be roughly 100 Vietnam veterans that have had the same cancer, and interesting enough, served in the same area in Vietnam and got exposed to the same Agent Orange. He then received treatment and was, the last 3 years, the cancer clean. You know, it was a real success story. Unfortunately, Friday he found out that it's out of remission. But that's an oddity in itself for that group that has been treated. So he will go back and receive that treatment. But he wouldn't have been alive today if it wasn't for that veteran service officer that took that time to go out and make these things happen. The structure.
What county is this? Where would he?
This is Linn County. This is Pat Brillin.
Linn County. What's her name?
Pat Brillin did this.
Pat?
Pat Brillin, yes, our county service officer.
We want to recognize her.
Oh, I've already made it clear with her that I'm very happy with some of the stuff that she does. The structure of different militaries, whether you have served in being a dual service member myself, you see this, you have the Navy on one side, you have Army National Guard on this side, you might have Air Force. A lot of the different military branches are slightly different, and a lot of veterans' issues are slightly different, and it's a very complex situation. And so you have this network of veteran service officers who happen to be quite knowledgeable at making these different things work, and they provide a service that I cannot tell you. I can't even begin to describe some of the great things these individuals do. And when I was looking at that issue, I thought to myself, well, hold it, I know that veteran service officers' positions have been cut over the years in the 90s, and that we have had problems. And now we have a whole batch of new veterans being pumped out right now that are serving in Afghanistan, Iraq. Some of the ones that served in Kosovo, or what we used to refer to the not-so-peacekeeping missions that we have ongoing all the time. These individuals come back, and some may have some medical problems, some may have some post-traumatic stress problems, some may have employment problems, some may have a lot of different difficulties that could be service-connected. And that veteran service officer is the real point of contact, the individual that they can sit down with face-to-face that's not one of your bureaucrats from one of the larger agencies, but actually a citizen or someone who lives right there and takes a great care in what they're doing. And I was going, wouldn't that be great that we know in the next couple of years the need for these officers is going to grow? How are we going to finance them and fund them? Well, let's combine it with the issue of rehabilitation of these veterans. And, you know, that's kind of how this, Madam Chair, that's how it kind of led here. I could go on for 2 hours with other thoughts of why I did this. And I really appreciate, I do read the committee minutes, and you may not see me here all the time, but I keep abreast of many of the actions that this committee takes. And I'm very appreciative of that there is this interest in some of these veterans. I know that Representative Propps probably left the room, but I am equally or more importantly impressed that he would take it on upon his own to bypass what a lot of us have called the media filter and gone to an area and gotten the facts. This is truly important. I told Jeff one day something that he didn't know. I go, when some of us were in Desert Storm and spent time in Iraq, something that a lot of people don't know about Oregon's largest amount of casualties that we took and combat deaths were reservists. It was not full-time military people. A lot of people don't understand that. Reservists and National Guard have contributed for years. You know, it's not a new issue about these individuals being there, but they were always kind of separated out and treated separately. And I'd like to see the committee approve this and let this go to the voters and let them help decide. And I'm gonna stop right here because I'll probably sit here all afternoon. And I know that I talked to Director Willis, and he has a few suggestions and comments that when I sat with Representative Boquist, and we had talked back and forth, and we weren't really clear on how this should be worded. And I think Director Willis has some really good ideas that I endorse, a couple of small word changes on this, to give some flexibility to these veterans and veteran service officers.
Well, I think it's highly commendable of you to be that concerned, and I am so grateful for you, and thank you so much for being here and for caring, and most importantly, putting some action to your words and your value system. And I'm going to call Greg Willis to join you.
I will proudly do that.
All right.
For the record, my name is Jim Willis. I'm director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs and a resident of Albany, Oregon. This is one of my county commissioners, although I have to tell you, he developed this idea without talking to me, not that he needs to, but I've known him for some years, and I know him to be a quiet champion for veterans until it's time to take action. And therefore, if I may, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm impressed with House Joint Resolution 34 for a number of reasons. First and foremost, it is a resolution introduced on behalf of veterans by veterans. It is introduced by veterans who serve as elected officials at the state level and at the county level. I think that's very important because it allows them a broad representation and contact with the veterans community in the areas in which they live and work. The other reason I like House Joint Resolution 34 is because it involves a sharing of an existing funded resource, a sharing by a number of state agencies, in this case at 1.5% of the total going to this new proposal. What's also important about this resolution is that it has positive impacts on the original purpose of establishing this fund in the first place. Should this resolution be passed by the people of the state of Oregon, it will in fact contribute to the economic development of our state, it will create jobs, and it will finance public education. And the way that it will do that is through the three intended purposes of the establishment of this Veterans Benefit Fund. As an example, should the services provided by veteran service officers in each county be funded through this fund, that will result in additional claims and compensations coming to Oregon veterans. As we know, in September 2004, Oregon was receiving $495 million. In claims and compensation, in large part because of the work of the veteran service officers at our counties, our national service officers, and the veterans benefit counselors who work for the state of Oregon. That number, I honestly believe, by September 2006 will exceed $500 million. That is economic development, and that is part of the original purpose of this lottery fund being established in the first place. The third purpose of this fund was to establish scholarships for Oregon veterans who have served on active duty. I have respectfully asked drafters and the carrier on this, or the person who introduced the bill, to change that to the Oregon Veterans Education Fund because that fund already exists. The other reason why HJR 34 is a good idea and should be referred to the people is because the intent of this resolution begins to pull together all of the intents that have been put in place by the bills proposed both on the Senate and the House side for veterans, their families, the National Guard, and the Reserve. These bills will impact these people in such a way that when they do become the veterans of tomorrow, they will then become the citizens who live, work, and sustain our state by their investments and their hard work. And the reason they're going to be able to work hard is because they've got a good education. And let's remember that part of that education fund is also vocational education. So those people who want to go into the building trades, plumbers, electricians, pipe fitters, and so on can do that. Those who would prefer to go into academics, such as the Troops to Teachers program, could easily be benefited by the good works of this House Joint Resolution. And finally, the issue with rehabilitation of our personnel in the Guard and Reserve. If you can rehab close to home, and this fund can help you stay home as opposed to driving to Seattle or some other place, that's going to be hugely helpful to these people and to their families. So we at the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs support this House Joint Resolution and urge positive action by the committee with regard to it. And I'm happy to answer any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Having studied the lottery considerably this term, I'm going to be danged if I speak on this and danged if I don't. So anyway, here goes. You know, it took 10 years, I think, for the lottery to equal $1 billion. And starting this next year, it's going to be doing now $1 billion every biennium. So I think that gives us a big opportunity to do some things for those who are investing in that lottery, a return on their investment. So what I did briefly, I took 84% of $1 billion, that's $840 million. And then since this called for 1.5%, well, 1% of that 840 million is 8.4 million. And another 0.5% is 4.2, would equal a total of 12.6 million. Yeah, that's just my excellent math skills since I went back to Western last year to get my elementary credential, and I learned how to add and multiply again. But anyway, so I am curious. I spoke with a good representative about this, and I'm wondering, you know, what do we really need? We've got to be sure. I likewise, you know, have three other measures that are similar to this. And so, for example, if you go to line 5 on the last page, I'm concerned of, you know, the good commissioner probably does not know that we had to start this committee by defining a veteran. Because we don't agree with what they called a veteran. And so we have done that. But on line 5, it says, providing services to Oregon veterans by funding. And I am for the veterans. But what we really mean, I think, is veterans whose home of record was Oregon at the time of their enlistment and service. Is that true?
That would be reflected in the DD-14 on your home of record discharge.
But, I mean, we have many more Oregon veterans right now than those whose home of record is Oregon. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
For tax purposes.
So otherwise,
yes.
We probably get all the veterans, which is fine with me, but from the entire United States, because we've offered these benefits, you know, come join us. So I want to be sure that we identify what we mean there. And then on line 9, while I appreciate the effort of our Guard and our reserves right now, I suggest we just take out against global terrorism so this bill does not become obsolete the first time we move to some other type of warfare. And I don't think that causes any problems.
Madam Chair, if I may, so and members of the committee, so what you'd be doing is putting a period at the end of the word operations.
If you don't have a problem.
I don't.
I mean, I pray to God we're not always fighting global terrorism. I mean, good job now.
Again, Madam Chair, I was just writing this out kind of my thoughts are kind of free-flowing. And
I appreciate that. I'm not criticizing. I'm just wondering if we could be more inclusive.
And I do have a couple of strong opinions when it comes to this, because 1989, a Marine gunnery sergeant that was assigned to this was shot to death by an NPA member. Okay, the NPA is part of the Islamic fundamentalist terrorist groups that make up Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is not a single organization. A lot of people don't understand that, but we've been dealing with these problems for decades. It wasn't something new that happened on a certain date. I have no problem with that being removed.
All right. Okay. Nor do I, ma'am.
Okay. And then I have one other issue. I do not know where we came up with this percentage.
I would like to defer to Commissioner Lindsay, because I don't know the answer to that question.
Tim pulled out my calculator.
Adequate. If we're going to do this, let's make it adequate. You know, I'll go out and get 70,000 signatures if we didn't make the ballot this way, but I want to be sure that we're funding properly, because you're probably only going to do this one time.
Right. And, Madam Chair, what I was doing was I was covertly having conversations with Director Willis. He had no idea what I was doing, inquiring about certain funds and things. And when I pulled out my calculator, I just...
That'll teach you.
just a little bit of clarity. When you say $1 billion on the lottery fund, does that include inclusive of poll tabs and all the rest? That figure is not the figure that's here. The figure that's here is video lottery. So that dollar figure is slightly, and I don't have my notes here, but I thought I arrived at a figure that was roughly $8.5 million. That may not seem like a lot, but as a program progresses, and this is earmarked for certain funds, that money will end up being in cash carryover accounts, probably for a biennium or two. And as the veterans' needs increases, I would envision that some of that money is there extra, because it's specifically earmarked for those purposes. I don't think there would be a huge drop. If you take a look at scholarship or the educational fund, a lot of veterans first use up the GI Bill, and some never go into that fund because they've satisfied their education requirements.
The only place you can do that here in the state of Oregon is Western Oregon University.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Which is an excellent...
Well, we're going to have to fix that.
No, you may work on it, because I was very unhappy last week to find that out.
Wow, that's actually news to me. But I did wrestle with the dollar figure, Madam Chair, and I understand the thing about adequacy. I also understand, I'm pretty blunt when it comes to things like this. I understand the greed of government, too. I don't want this. There are some good things that are done with some of the monies here. I would not want to see some of that disrupted. I would like to see this built as kind of a partnership on this section of the Constitution, where we can stick several different issues together that may not be specifically in common, but they're put here together so that there's kind of a better sharing on this. I think the other thing that would be beneficial from this earmarking is that some of the monies that would be earmarked here would cover some of the general fund expenditures that are currently in the budget. So that as I sat here and listened to the other House bill referring to educational savings accounts, right? That there would
medical savings accounts
for some of these Guard members. You would now have possibly a new source of money to draw on, which would be monies that could be diverted from this purpose. Not specific to the lottery, but what's currently coming out of the general fund. It gives you a little bit of freer motion to do good things like that.
Okay. I will explain to you, there's no way on earth. Well, you've been reading the minutes, so you do know we are establishing an emergency relief fund for the military, mm-hmm. and reserve, and emergency relief fund for the veterans. Mm-hmm. And we also have, you're going to hear next, an education bill that is pretty incredible. Mm-hmm. And, in fact, it's long. I mean, the one we have is, Val Connolly said, it goes way back you know, 60 years ago, and we've done nothing. I mean, $50 a month, or 35, I mean, really, for education. So we may, you know, augment this in another way. This may be just scholarships for very specific, unusual reasons or something. But I wanted to ask you, would you have any... we'd like to put veterans, seniors, and disabled here because we have spouses of our veterans who have difficult situations and have needs. Seems appropriate.
I guess, again, when I think about things like this, is the language, would it be specific, very specific to that? Because you could easily envision my third cousin from Arkansas showing up here or something. I'm not actually from there, but claiming this benefit. You know, I like to kind of keep it down to, sure, children of fallen soldiers, airmen, Navy, or, you know, immediate, you know, that I would... You know, that I think would be amenable. But I do, you know, I get worried that if we expand it too much, what happens is someday down the road, and I use this with a piece when I go back to D.C. to testify on a piece of federal legislation, you have to be very careful what's worded in there, because it only takes one individual to stand up somewhere and say, hey, why are these guys getting all this money? You know, my district or my individuals, we know right now that if we did this, I can tell you frankly, Douglas County has a veterans hospital down there in Multnomah County. Well, yeah, a lot of funds probably will travel to those counties. But that's not what the issue is. The issue is about veterans, you know. But I don't want someone to stand up and say, well, my college has not... getting this fund for my third cousin from whatever, you know, I don't want to see that ever come up, because that just adds, shall I say, fodder to an issue that maybe we don't want to visit a few years down the road. But you know, dependents, that's different.
Okay, thank you. And I also, I just think we need to get some type of financial concept to Director Willis, you know. What do we really need? Do our job. You know, results are all that count. And so to really do what we've set forth in our performance measurements, what does it take? If you wouldn't mind to work on that and come back and we could discuss it, that would be great.
Madam Chair, I'll be happy to do that.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Oakley.
Madam Chair, less of a question, I think more of a future request for the administrator, with your indulgence, Madam. When Commissioner Lindsay really brought this to me, I'm actually Senator Courtney's bill in front of me, which is the funding of the County Veterans Service Office. We're trying to figure out what is the permanent source. And so when Commissioner Lindsay asked me, of course, he's one of my commissioners, so I don't have a lot of choice, but when he brought forward this concept and said, you know, this would provide permanent funding, or provide the option for the voters of the state of Oregon to provide permanent funding for this, where we know it will help veterans, it will bring in dollars, so on and so forth. And so he brought forth this concept, and one of the very first things that, you know, I said, well, you can't rob Peter to pay Paul. And I think the administrator could find out this information for us, because in the agricultural natural resources hearing, the particular funding area, and I'm not an expert, I'm going to get together with Representative Barnhart, who's going to educate me, the particular funding area has a ending balance at 07 of $28 million. And so I said, well, you know, why not offer the public an option not to rob Peter to pay Paul, but to... take 25% of a known ending balance that might be for a dedicated fund, which, of course, we're going to have a tough time finding the $5 million for County Veterans Service Officers. So I'm amenable to figuring out how we could best do this, and I would ask that I think the good administrator can find out the details from Ways and Means and Budgets and stuff, so we know what it is we're talking about. Are we really taking money for somewhere? Is it really an ending balance? And what is the impact, and what accounts are sold and stuff? It might or might not come from. Thank you, Madam Chair.
I just want to caution everybody. this very week, I'm going to give you an example of what can happen. I have a very good bill. Had it proven, work done by individuals who knew what was expected of them to tell me the cost of a situation. And I did that. And then from the state agency, yesterday received this phony baloney that said, oh, hold it. There's never been any costing on unfunded mandates. Therefore, you know, that type of non-support, I mean, in the chalkboard project, for example, that's one of the top three. You know, parents want schools to be focused on the basics, is number one. Number two, friendly to parents. And thirdly, end of unfunded mandates. So I sponsored that bill. I just want to caution you about getting into this, the nitty-gritty with agencies that, you know, that are ancillary to what we're doing, and don't even go there. I mean, don't go there. Director Willis, this is his business. He knows it. It's his function. And so let's go where the individual knows. I'd rather battle for what he knows than, like, this employee of this state who has never worked in a school, has never been a teacher, has never been a principal, has no concept that unfunded mandates cost 8 to 10% of the school budget. You know, killing the bill. So watch out for the bill killers is all in like the
thank you, Madam Chair. And I'd really like to thank the Commissioner and Representative Boquist. This is, I mean, folks, and I'd actually characterize it slightly differently than Representative Boquist, because rather than robbing Peter to pay Paul, I think you're really focused on saying we're trying to set priorities here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you're going to get a lot of arrows shot at both of you,
oh,
maybe
I know
today, maybe in the days to come. You know, you're where you're staffed, Representative Boquist. But I really respect people who come forward and say, here is a source of money, and here is a set of priorities I think we need to do. And then we can have the debate about what is the higher priority. One factor you probably don't know, but maybe our administrator could let us know. If you know it, that'd be great. Actually calculating what the growth rate in the lottery proceeds has been, mm-hmm. because I bet the growth rate, if we look back to when some of these additions were made to the lottery, the growth rate in lottery proceeds, somewhat tragically, is pretty high.
Yeah.
And so the revenue generated, you know, what was generated as 15% of a total at some point, you know, 13.5% next biennium is actually probably a lot more dollars, even adjusted for inflation, than it was. You probably don't know those percentages, mm-hmm. but if we could find some way to find out what the growth rate of the lottery is, that would be helpful to me. The one question I'm interested in, you have obviously identified three sources on the last page of the bill, or three results. I wonder if you would be open to possibly looking at some language around employment, education, training, things which, interestingly, are very consistent with the current intent of the lottery. And clearly we've heard a lot about the needs around education, employment, and training. Even perhaps even somewhat broader, still focused on veterans, but I'm wondering if you'd be interested in open to that.
The suggestion by Director Willis was that on line six at full-time county, that wording be removed, because the state unemployment office has county service, I mean veterans service representatives. Of course, some organizations do, and it opens kind of that into there.
They don't.
No, ODVA does.
You guys put them in.
Yeah.
We have them.
Okay. I don't know.
In fact, we've been getting and jumping on Department of Employment because they don't help the veterans the way they should.
Because I was going to say, I know one of these guys. I was going,
anyway, but we appreciate you very much being here. We appreciate this deal being brought. Representative Boquist and good commissioner, thank you, Director Lewis. Members, I need to recess this committee and ask if you could return at 6 o'clock this evening. No, you can't.
I'm not able to. I'm actually available because I should be finished with another meeting. Well, actually, 6:30.
6:30. Well, we want to be after the open house,
right?
Or the welcome back,
right?
Okay, 6:30, 6:30.
Fine.
I'm going to go about, I don't know about Barnhart.
And do you want to maybe instead of plan on that extra meeting, evening meeting?
Well, we've been asked to move these bills that relate to funds. We've been asked to push. In fact, even Representative Farr said, "Why don't you get this done over the evening?" I said, "Okay, you know, we're pushing as hard as we can."
Madam Chair.
Yes, got a better idea? You want to come at 5 in the morning?
Any day next week. I'm
to that. 5 a.m.?
5 a.m. in the morning. Is that better?
Fine with me.
Okay. Representative Bruin?
Okay.
Madam Chair, I think you can do that together.
Whenever you say.
I'll see y'all.
Well, we're going to have a difficulty on that, and I apologize. We have not. That you have to set an agenda for another day, and we have not set an agenda for tomorrow.
So we have to meet at a quarter of midnight?
You would have to meet at a quarter of midnight this evening.
And I could sit here until for 5 hours?
Bending the rules there. I would suggest that you set an extra meeting or two for next week in the evenings if you'd like to do that. So we don't have the 24-hour notice or 48-hour notice.
How about 2 o'clock this afternoon?
I'm in revenue.
I'm in revenue too, Madam Chair.
I just wanted to, well, I can't even talk about it. I wanted to tell you that we've had some discouraging words from those, the Park and Recreation Group and the ML Basin Council and kind of OWEB telling us about how much money they're going to lose if we take their money. All right, we don't want to take their money. We don't have to take their money. I just want you to know that. So if you hear from anybody, we do not have to take anybody's money, okay?
Can we continue right now until 11, or?
We must stop at this
point.
We must
stop, okay.
I don't think there was any testimony we had today that we didn't need, so. Boy, next week is.
Madam Chair.
Oh, it just pushes, the bad thing, it pushes these back. I was anxious to get this education bill moved out. The $500 one that we've already talked about in work session. Can we do it real quick? Well, no, we can't. Is it? Okay. Darn. I want to get in the co-chair's budget. That's what I was worried about today. The rest I think we can get in, but that one, those two we have to prove. 3 o'clock? 4 o'clock rock? No, we're at the veterans. We're at the military.
I'm sure I can do 3 o'clock.
You can do 3?
I can do 3.
3? No. Cannot be 3.
You have to choose your favorite committee.
What, is Barnhart on any of your committees that can't do 3?
Why don't you recess?
Let's try to be 3.
Why don't you recess until 3 o'clock? We'll meet, we'll let notify members where the meeting would take place. I'm not sure here. And we can, we'll call and see what members we can find. Yeah, make sure you just recess. You want to close your hearing on this.
Okay. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Joint Resolution 34 and thank everyone who participated. It was an excellent exchange. And
we will also post this room in case the meeting is moved to a different location. So it will. We'll
and we'll recess until 3 o'clock. At such time, our good administrators will let us know where.
Madam Chair, are we going to do, which bills are we going to do for witnesses' benefits? By the way, Fish and Wildlife here, I don't think that's an earth killer. I think that could be put off. I don't know. I mean, depends on what you want to do, Madam Chair.
Okay.
We can't add anything. We've had hearings on the three last bills here, so we have 4 bills that are remaining on the agenda.
We have Fish and Wildlife, I'm sorry, here to testify today. Could I ask, will your testimony be that we've received, or have we received one yet? Do you have written testimony?
Madam Chair, we have written testimony, and I did deliver a copy to your office yesterday.
Okay.
And I have gone over that with Representative Boquist as well.
Okay, thank you.
Can we submit their written testimony?
Sure, we can bring their written testimony back. If you, I don't have copies of it, but if you have copies, I think we can do that.
Would it be acceptable if we distribute your written testimony to all the members and so you don't have to be back at 3?
They'll want to be back.
You want to be back?
Madam Chair, we can come back at 3 o'clock, and I do have copies you can distribute right now so they can take a look at it, and we can move right along at 3 o'clock.
Since everybody's got somewhere else to be between now and then, hold it. So you could give them to the good administrator, and if you will, please, and thank you, and I apologize for those, but we'll see you at 3 o'clock, and we'll just do our best.
And we'll do our best.
Noon America. This is the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. Today is Thursday, March the 31st. It is now 7 minutes after 3. And welcome everyone back from this morning. And thank you for working with us. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2437.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2437, you heard on the 24th of March, this allows veterans pursuing education or training to receive state benefit of $35 or $50 per month, even if they are receiving federal veterans education aid. It takes, the way this bill is written currently, it takes effect July 1st, 2006. You have 3 amendments that should have been attached to your bill, and I have some copies that I can give to the audience here in a moment. The dash one increases the monthly benefit amounts to $350 and $500 for full-time students. The dash two amendment changes the effective date to July 1st, 2005. Remember the bills it's currently written, it takes effect July 1st, 2006. And then the dash three amendment deletes the restriction of benefits allowing all veterans to be eligible. The currently only veterans with campaign or expeditionary medal or ribbons are eligible.
Thank you very much, Mr. Stembridge. As y'all will recall, we might ask Val Conley to come up again. She testified previously on this bill and is an authority on this subject. In the event there might be any questions, and welcome, Val. Will you identify yourself, please?
Yes. Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Val Conley. I'm the administrator of our Veterans Services Division, Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs.
Thank you very much for being here. When you testified previously, was in your testimony, it said the largest bulk of Oregon veterans, approximately 66%, are those who served during World War II, Korea, and the Vietnam eras. The youngest veterans in this group are now in their 50s, and the majority of them are no longer looking to further their educations. Currently, there are 10 veterans statewide utilizing the Oregon Education Aid for Veterans program.
That is correct, Madam Chair.
So, following your testimony, I believe, on another bill, we had the university system in when I was very disappointed that they weren't going to help us with our program for our military to make education affordable, the only one that was within our benefits of the GI Bill. Uh-oh, and there's a dollar. is Western Oregon. So, but anyway, they said they had 8,500 veterans attending school. So why does it say there are only 10 utilizing the Oregon Educational Aid?
Madam Chair, because the way the law is written now, veterans cannot use the state educational aid program at the same time they're using their federal VA entitlement, educational entitlement.
So does this mean these veterans are the ones that are only getting the $35 or $50 a month that we established in World War II?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
And increased in any way for 50 years?
That's correct.
Okay. I just went back and reread that, and I thought, no, there must be some...
No, and I might add, when I go out and I speak to veterans and veterans groups, and they ask me about state veterans benefits, it's really kind of embarrassing.
Well,
to tell them what Oregon benefits are, because they're so meager.
I can appreciate that. And as we look at the bill, is there any? Do you have a copy of it?
I do.
Looking at lines 7 and 8 on the first page, or the only page, the one and only. Is there a reason why we don't include vocational schools in this? We say professional training. Does that include vocational schools?
Madam Chair, yes, it does.
Oh, good. Okay. And then line 10, this not to exceed the total number of months served in the armed forces. So if I were in, what would I, 2 years?
Madam Chair, if you were in 2 years,
for 2 years,
24 months, correct.
And then it says, or a total of 36 months. And I'm assuming that 36 months could be spread over 5 years.
Correct.
Have to be taken.
Yes, it does not have to be taken all at the same time.
3 months consecutive?
Correct.
Okay. And we changed the dates. And the only other thing I can think of is I wrote a note about this that said, these veterans, should these we identify these veterans as veterans whose home of record is Oregon, or was Oregon at the time of enlistment and service?
Madam Chair, no. No, they have to be residing in the state of Oregon now and go to an Oregon accredited school.
So if I'm a veteran from Montana and I move over here and I live in Oregon now, will I get this benefit if I go to Western?
Madam Chair, yes, you will.
Is that the way it should be? Committee, I'm asking. Yes. So if we get all the veterans in the nation, not that I wouldn't like to do that here, what if they all come here? Because now we're letting them get an education. Representative Farr.
Val,
I mean, I think it's great.
What is the requirement in other states?
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, I'm not really familiar with other states' educational aid programs or if they even have them.
I'm wondering if it's reciprocal. If our veterans move to Montana, then would they be able to, if we're a veteran from Oregon, we move to Montana, do we still get to go to school on the Oregon benefits?
Madam Chair, I have known of veterans who have moved out of this state to avail themselves of other states' veterans' benefits.
Madam Chair, may I ask a follow-up? But they wouldn't be able to access Oregon's benefit because you said that that would have to be at an accredited Oregon school.
Madam Chair, Representative Farr, that is correct. They must be living in the state of Oregon.
Is there any requirement of how long they must have lived here?
Madam Chair, no, there's not.
Okay, I guess I'm going to need some judgment calls on this. I agree. I don't know what that should be. Maybe Representative Bocas to help us.
Representative Bocas can find information in his office that I requested.
Madam Chair, the answer to the education question, Madam Chair, is probably 20 states provide the entire free tuition. Tuition free for members of the National Guard Reserve and some veterans benefit. So even if you were hypothetically to move this to 350 or what is an amendment right here, we'd still be
350. We're still way behind.
We'd be to the lower 50%. I don't think you're going to see mass access from the state of Montana to the state of Oregon, Madam Chair.
So Chair, how should this read?
Let's go ahead with Representative
Farr. I was just going to say, what about a mass exodus from Texas to Oregon?
Oh, I'd like that. Bring those cowboys.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The other thing to consider, and I would support with the language that's currently here. I think we need to serve the people that want to live here, have served, regardless. And the most important thing that I'd like to point out in this bill is for undergraduate classes. And a number of the other programs that are available are usually for postbaccalaureate classes.
and which is interesting because that's the one thing I've found with the troops of teachers. That program currently is only if they've already have a bachelor's degree. So helping people get their bachelor's degree is critical. It's just that foundation step. So I think we ought to leave it as it is.
Okay, are there any other comments? I'll entertain a motion on amendment.
Am I reading correctly? In the dash one amendments, I see the two new amounts being $150 and $350. But in the staff measure summary, it refers to $350 and
$500.
Is the amendment wrong, or is the staff measure summary?
Line 12.
Because it looks like the two new amounts we're going to are in the dash one amendments are $150 and $350, even though in the staff measure summary it says $350 and $500.
It'll be $350 and $500. I was just going to say in line 12, because if you look at the amendment of the dash ones, it says, on line 4, it says, in line 12, delete 15 and insert 150. That's for beneficiaries pursuing full-time undergraduate college courses after September 1, 1949, mm-hmm. shall receive additional state financial aid in the amount of $150 per month for each month of such study.
Madam Chair, that $150 is in addition to the $350. That's the difference in the. Why one is $350 and one is $500?
One is $350 and the other is $150, and that equals $500.
You won't find $500 in the bill.
Okay.
Okay, are you with me now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The $350 and the $150. We change the dates. Okay. Okay. I'll accept a motion to...
Madam Chair?
Yes, Representative Farr.
I recommend we pass House Bill 2437 as amended.
You know, we have to amend first.
Oh,
all right. We've got to accept each one of these,
okay.
One by one.
I recommend that we accept the amendment, dash one amendment to House Bill 2437.
Representative Farr has moved that we accept the dash one amendments to House Bill 2437. Is there any discussion? Okay, if not, so be it.
You want to ask if there's any objections?
Is there any objection? With no objection, so be it.
You got 6-0-1.
Madam Chair, I recommend we pass House Bill 2437 with dash two amendments.
Representative Farr has so courteously moved House Bill 2437 dash two amendments. Is there any objection?
Now, just to clarify, Madam Chair, we're voting now on adding the dash two amendments to the bill.
Adding dash two.
Did I not say add? I'm sorry.
I'm just making sure that I understand where we are. That's all. Okay. And that's what I now understand.
We are adding dash two.
Yeah.
Thank you, Representative Barnhart.
Madam Chair.
Any objection? Did I ask that? Seeing none, they are adopted.
Madam Chair, I recommend that we add the dash three amendment to House Bill 2437.
Did you say add?
Yes, is that what I'm saying?
Yes, you're very good. We learn quick. That's what's going on. Representative Farr has moved the dash threes to House Bill 2437. Is there any objection? If not, the dash threes are adopted. Representative Farr?
Madam Chair, I recommend.
You want to go ahead and move.
Madam Chair, I move we pass House Bill 2437 as amended, unanimously to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Farr has moved House Bill 2437 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Could you call the roll, please, Katie?
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Representative Bush.
Aye.
Representative Brew. Excuse. Representative Carr. Aye. Representative Hunt. Aye. Representative Paul. Aye. Chair Nelson. Aye. Having received unanimous vote, House Bill 2437 is passed. as amended on to Ways and Means, and I will close the work session on House Bill 2437. I will open a work session on House Bill 2687.
Madam Chair, House Bill 2687, first heard on the 17th of March. It reduces from 180 to 178 hours the number of days the active military service required to qualify as a veteran. It includes persons who served at least 30 days of active military duty in a president-designated combat zone within the definition of a veteran. You have two amendments. The dash one deletes with other than a dishonorable discharge, substituting the phrase under honorable conditions, and it reduces the necessary combat zone experience to any length of time. The dash two reduces the necessary combat zone experience to at least one day. I think you have copies of those amendments. I have copies of those amendments that I will put up for public consumption.
Okay, thank you very much. Jim Stembridge.
I think
the question in re-reviewing this bill. Once again, I've got the Oregon veteran issue. Representative Boquist, is there any need in this for us also to identify what an Oregon veteran is for the sake of any future legislation we may be working on? Or
I don't believe so.
Okay. And as I understand it, on page one, if you look at line 24, this now reads, for a period of more than 178 consecutive days and was discharged with other, and was discharged under honorable conditions. Does it say okay, was discharged or released from active duty under honorable conditions? Okay. Line 25 reads, for 178 days or less, and was discharged or released from active duty under honorable conditions. Line 26 reads, we delete the dishonorable discharge. Line 27, excuse me. We delete for 30 days or more to begin with and insert for any length of time in a combat zone and was discharged or released from active duty under honorable conditions. Are there any questions about the dash ones? Okay, and dash two, on line 27, this is where we take off the 30 days or more, and the previous for any length of time, and insert at least one day in a combat zone. It was discharged or released from active duty with honorable discharge. I mean, under honorable conditions. Okay, are there any questions about the dash ones or the dash two?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Focal.
Under the dash one, and at the time that this was presented forward, I think since then, and I don't have the note, maybe the good administrator would pass me my note so that I don't know exactly what I'm talking about. The present regulation used by the Department of Defense characterizes or utilizes five discharges as of Department of Defense within the last 3 or 4 weeks. An honorable discharge, other than honorable discharge, a general discharge, an uncharacterized discharge, and a dishonorable discharge are the five presently used discharges by the Department of Defense. So therefore, you presently can get a general discharge that does not say honorable on it and having served across the board. Uncharacterized is generally, the general definition of uncharacterized discharge is someone that may have received even up to what they would used to call an administrative discharge, who served honorably for 6 or 7 years or 10 years, and is maybe in the case of Iraq, they decided got too shell-shocked, and they are putting out under a discharge. The only one that's purely characterized today by the Department of Defense is dishonorable discharge, which goes back to the original bill in front of us. Well, I'm not an expert. I did rely on a colonel in the personnel branch to tell me this. So,
Mr. McDonald, come forward, please. Mr. Ray, and let's straighten this out.
For the record, my name is Matt McDonald, representing Oregon Veterans. This new discharge list that he just put out is new to me. I know you used to be able to get administrative discharge either under honorable conditions or not under honorable conditions. You have an honorable discharge that speaks for itself. You have an undesirable discharge, which is used to be not, you couldn't get out with, that's not with honorable conditions. A bad conduct discharge and a dishonorable discharge, all of those are not under honorable conditions. If the law is changed on the, as Representative Boquist has stated, then we need to change what we're doing here. We need to be up to date with what the armed forces are doing today. So that's going to change your dash amendment. And you're going to have to list, Representative Boquist knows, on the administrative discharge, does it say today under honorable conditions or not under honorable conditions?
Madam Speaker, there's no administrative discharge anymore.
Okay.
And what's it called?
That you fall into one of the five categories: honorable, other than honorable, general, which does not mention it, just says general, or uncharacterized. The most common use of the uncharacterized is, in fact, combat type discharges where they don't want to the person served honorably, but they don't want to. There is no explanation. Literally, in uncharacterized, there is no official explanation from the Department of Defense listed on the discharge. In a nutshell, it's up to the command prerogative of anything from mental incapacitation to others, but they would not. The military determined that they were not going to give them a dishonorable discharge. So I guess the point being is if now it's either dishonorable or it's one or the other. So, and the way the legislation is written and drafted, dishonorable is the category that we're talking about trying to delete, or ensure that there are no benefits given for dishonorable.
Okay,
everything above there, above that line, uncharacterized, general, other than honorable, and honorable, all still fit into the original intent.
Thank you. What conditions would you discharge someone under other than honorable? That category.
Colonel Caldwell, would you like to join us?
Under honorable conditions?
Under the present regulations.
Under the new rules.
And that's the key question, is because other than honorable is between honorable and general. So.
Okay. Maybe Colonel Caldwell.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell, Deputy Director of the Military Department. The only thing I can think of is that somebody fraudulently re-enlisted or enlisted, perhaps got off to basic training, were discovered during that period that they were underage or fraud, you know, and that's typical of fraudulent enlistment, or they had lied on their enlistment documents and had felonies perhaps or something, then it would probably fall into that category. You know, they willfully lied to get into the service, and that's not going to be an honorable discharge. And typically those are uncharacterized. But if there was some egregious actions that the individual used, then it could be, you know, under less than honorable conditions, or I forget the term, what's the
administrative, not under honorable conditions, and that would probably be the best example I could give you.
Uncharacterized?
Uncharacterized. That's typically how they would do it, but let's say that the individual, you know, had some egregious acts that they, you know, did in the process of this fraud, then they may choose to discharge them in under less than honorable conditions and move away from that down to a further. And clearly, they're falling under the UCMJ, Uniform Code of Military Justice, and in our case, from our standpoint, even when these individuals are on active duty for training, they're still under Title 32 status, which means they fall under the Oregon Code of Military Justice. And so, therefore, we have a different, you know, they're similar, but they're not exact.
Would it be acceptable, do you believe, that we just leave it as honorable?
Dishonorable.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think administrative discharges are typically
under honorable conditions is what we're saying.
Right.
Could we just,
you know,
like
I think you could leave it. I think that sends the right signal that they have to be under honorable conditions. So if it isn't honorable, if it's less than honorable for some reason, it's not under honorable conditions, and therefore you've eliminated any of those other categories of even being having to be defined, I would think.
Okay.
I would say, Madam Chair, I think we're seeing a lot of just flat general discharges coming out right now.
But that's honorable.
No, not under our how we're categorizing it here, it would not be. If we left the wording as dishonorable, if there was any mention in the discharge of dishonorable, they would not be entitled to benefits. And then the two other requirements we have here is they have had to serve 178 days, you know, or less, and we're also talking about being in the combat zone. So we have other qualifiers.
Right. Yeah. That was the point I was going to make, too, if I may, Madam Chair. Somebody who was discharged with a general discharge but who met the other requirements, wouldn't we want to call them a veteran? That means that they served for more than 178 days. They served for less than 178 days, but were in a combat zone for at least a day. And they received a combat campaign ribbon.
But if they don't have an honorable discharge, no.
Madam Chair, you're going to probably eliminate half the veterans getting off active duty at this point because literally the out processing stations, unless they have a ribbon that was issued to them, they're just giving them a general discharge and putting them out right now.
But a general would not be qualified as?
Not under the present definition we're talking about.
Okay, so should we say general and general?
Madam Chair, I think your terminology of under honorable conditions qualifies virtually everybody unless it's dishonorable.
Okay.
And so if you say under honorable conditions, that means that any discharge that you get, regardless of how it's characterized, fits that definition under honorable conditions. The only thing that does not is dishonorable. And if it's dishonorable, then there's been an action to cause that. Nobody can administratively give a dishonorable discharge. You have to go through a court-martial or some sort of judicial action in the military to receive a dishonorable discharge. Nobody can administratively give that. It's impossible.
That's good enough for me.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Hunt.
Following up on that, though, isn't the terminology that was in the original bill with other than a dishonorable discharge, doesn't that best characterize what you're talking about?
And Madam Chair, it says it a different way, but yes, that's the same thing. I think the terminology war we got, or not war, debate we got into, it has changed. It's not been consistent throughout the years, and they've modified it. So either using that terminology or under honorable conditions really does cover the waterfront.
If I could follow up on that,
yes.
Madam Chair, and so you think if we use that terminology, we're good because we're obviously trying to capture a definition both for folks who were discharged under the old terminology and for folks who will be discharged under the new terminology, right. And maybe there'll be another incarnation of new terminology. Right. With this language, do you think we're good for all those categories?
Madam Chair, Representative Hunt, I believe so.
Right. Okay, let's ask Mr. Stembridge to take us back to the original wording of other than dishonorable and with another amendment, if you will, please.
May I suggest, Madam Chair?
Yeah, Representative Barnhart?
If you simply adopt the dash twos, I think
we're good.
you ignore the dash ones and just adopt the dash twos. I think you're done. Would that be true, Jim?
Yes, the dash twos change.
Except we need line six.
Just the four that's words.
It. Excuse me?
That's it. That's what this is.
Okay. Dash two.
Well, that's what it looks like to me. I think you're brilliant.
Well, I wouldn't go that far, Madam Chair. I have no representative of our heart.
Well, I mean, okay. I think you're brilliant, so I'll accept your motion that we dash the dash ones and accept the dash accept the dash two.
So moved,
Representative Barnhart. Representative Barnhart has moved that we accept the dash two. Is there any objection to House Bill 2687? Hearing no objection, it is now officially a dash two amendment to House Bill 2687. I'll entertain a motion for the bill, please.
You want me to do that one, too?
Yes.
Madam Chair, I move that this goes to the floor, doesn't it?
This one goes to the floor. This one does not have subsequent.
Thank you. I move that House Bill 2687, as amended, be sent to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Barnhart has moved House Bill 2687 with the dash 2 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Would you call the roll, Marie? Katie. Sorry.
Representative
Byrne.
Excuse.
Representative Park.
Excuse.
Representative
Plant. Aye. Representative Cole. Aye.
Representative
Barnhart.
Aye.
Chair Nelson.
Aye. House Bill 2687 will now pass to the House floor with a due pass recommendation and with the dash 2 amendment attached.
And
Who would like to carry this? I think the veteran on the committee should do so. Representative Bocas, thank you. Representative Bocas would love to.
You can tell better stories.
And heaven forbid, you do not have to get into detail. Okay?
We'll be.
All right. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2687. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 2. And I'm going to give the gavel to the good Vice Chair Barnhart, and I will see you shortly.
Mr. Vice Chair, HJM 2 urges Congress to introduce and pass legislation to allow veterans in Oregon to receive health care from health care facilities other than federal Department of Veterans Affairs health care facilities.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and distinguished members of this Veterans Committee, and distinguished administrator as well, and nice assistant, Katie. It's my honor to be here. And House Joint Memorial is very, very important to me. I have, I believe, three times in the past. Excuse me, erase. In the past two terms, as well as this one, sponsored this House Joint Memorial. And every year I just keep hoping that our Department of Veteran Affairs will be more cognizant of what states like us who do not have an air base on our land, if they would just realize the tremendous sacrifice that our veterans have to go through when they have to drive 6 and 8 miles to the Veterans Hospital. We've had testimony in this committee from the head of the Veterans Hospital, and we know that they have the option to give vouchers to our veterans. Unfortunately, that doesn't happen as frequently as it should. So I hope you'll support me. We maybe need to change this bill, but this came from LCO. We do have one of the nation's highest numbers of veterans per capita,
and we're proud of every one of them. We love them. We're proud of them, and we want to serve them. We want to secure their future the way they've secured ours. And we do have over 370,000 veterans residing here. It does say in the Memorial 393, but I'm not exactly sure of that number. And we have over 1,300 members of the Oregon Guard who have been serving in Iraq. But we do not have more than one facility, one Oregon Veterans Home. And as you heard yesterday, I mean, even the state of Maine, or Maryland, one Maine, I think, has six. And, I mean, we have one that's in the Dalles. And wouldn't you know, I mean, it's far, far away from Klamath Falls and areas like that where we have a number of veterans. So it's my hope that we can ask our congressional delegation to help us pass a measure that will allow our veterans to access medical care close to their home so they don't have to drive. And heaven forbid if they should have to drive through Yamhill County and they're desperately ill because they would sit in the traffic for hours and hours. Going through the very essential Newburgh-Dundee non-bypass two-lane road that's backed up with 30,000 cars for a mile at a, in distance. Also, I just quickly relate to you that last year I was in the office of our very excellent Diane Salenti, a county veterans officer. A veteran was in there, and here's the example. He went to the Newburgh Hospital. He needed an insulin shot or something very basic. Would have cost him $50, but no, they required him to call an ambulance $1,200 later. You know, he's getting a bill. He's at the Veterans Hospital. It was unnecessary. It should not have been, but I happened to be there, and I said, you know, I'm going to continue to work so this doesn't happen. It's expensive, it's unnecessary, but most importantly, the veteran doesn't get what he deserves, and that's immediate care and attention. If there are any questions, I'd be happy to accept them at this time. If not, on behalf of the Veterans Committee, I'd like to thank you.
Representative Pham?
I wouldn't pass up this opportunity to clear you, Madam Chair.
Okay.
No, seriously, in line 28, I assume your clear intent is to have them to continue to have access to existing Veterans Administration facilities as well as to other health care facilities. I wonder if we might, in line 28 where it talks about health care facilities other than, if that could be misread to mean...
In addition to.
Exactly.
I think that's an excellent suggestion because we do have the very best Veterans Hospital in the entire state. And I certainly appreciate that, and that is a very good point. That was what was meant, but didn't happen. Are there any other questions?
Other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hunt. While Representative Hunt is returning to the podium, are there...
Did you say Hunt?
I'm sorry.
We look a lot alike.
Well, I'm in great... You can tell I'm rattled. I've never chaired a committee before.
It's the hairstyle mostly.
Yes. Are there others who would like to testify today on House Joint Memorial 2? You're back.
Finish, please.
Okay. If not, we'll close the public hearing on House Joint Memorial 2.
Thank you, Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Representative Nelson, Madam Chair.
I will now open a public hearing on House Bill 3103.
Madam Chair, House Bill 3103 authorizes the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to issue free resident annual hunting and fishing licenses to members of the Oregon National Guard, Armed Forces on Active Duty, and Military Reserves, as well as to persons retired from those services within the past year. We have just received a fiscal statement on the bill. I'll pass that out.
That is efficiency. Okay. Did he read it? Did we talk about it?
I think so.
Did you talk about this bill yet?
I did.
I'm sorry. I'm worried about 162nd at the fairgrounds. Okay. Did you care to testify?
We have a sign up. We do have a sign up.
Is this a? I mean, thank God you are surrounded by efficient women, Mr. Stembridge.
That's right. That's,
you should bake your cookies, Katie.
Thank you, Katie.
I'd like to call from Mike Caldwell. And from Caldwell, I just want to tell you this is the last time we're calling you today. So you can get on your way. I know you've got some very important things to do.
Yes, ma'am. You know I have an appointment, don't you?
Yes, sir.
And of course, we go for anybody that's here that wants to need a ride or something. I'd be happy to do that. For the record, my name is Colonel Mike Caldwell. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Military Department. The House bill before you is, I think, as we've talked about in this committee many times, this committee's seen fit to do what I believe are some very unique and positive things for guardsmen and reservists, and this fits in that category. Obviously, the cost of it is going to be, and I don't have the fiscal, I don't know if we produce that fiscal or not, but...
We have a brief.
A copy of it.
Yes, sir. Here she comes. Miss Efficiency. That's what that E stands for on the end of her name, Katie.
Yes, ma'am.
Katie Efficiency. All right. Did you go to Western? Okay.
She must have that with you.
Probably from Texas then. Oh. Okay, help me hear if you come.
That is very close to, as I look at the bottom line number, it's close to what we anticipated in as an estimate of what this would cost if we were to do it. I might just add to for the committee's flavor, as you well know, the governor has proposed $700,000 in his budget for benefits for National Guard members. Does not include the reserve components, as we've discussed many times in this committee. That could be somewhat difficult because we don't have a way to database on all the obvious the reserves. Nevertheless, of the $700,000, initially in conversations with the governor's office, we had committed up to $350,000 of that $700,000 for this type of activity, and we were also talking about offering free park passes or recreation passes or something for those that don't hunt and fish. So this number is fairly close, and again, we're estimating who's going to partake, and we just didn't want to make it exclusively for those that enjoy going out and hunting and fishing. The obvious problem that and here under ODF or ODFW, Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife scenario, their numbers are a little higher. They come up with $414,000 of other fund lost revenue, and then again $552,000. I think those are good guesses. I wouldn't question their numbers. I would just simply say that. We had a plan to do this in the governor's budget. This is outside of that plan, and I'm not here to. One of the things that the governor made really clear to all the agencies, and I'm here to tell you that we would prefer to stay inside that budget from our official position, because if something goes out of ODFW's pocket, then the governor said you find a replacement for that. And I frankly don't have any money trees in my backyard, nor much of a way to generate much more income. So that's the dilemma we find ourselves in. Is it a good deal? And will soldiers like it? Absolutely. And that was our plan, to try to take care of that need through the budget process. And with that, I will be quiet and let you get on with your business.
Colonel Caldwell.
Yes, ma'am.
Let's see. 30 and 31.
shouldn't this just say Oregon? Because it says the armed forces of the United States on active federal duty. And we're not requiring them to be on active federal duty to be able to go hunting. Ever seen Boquist?
Yeah, Madam Chair, there are three clauses according to legislative counsel. First is the National Guard, which is the first Oregon National Guard. Armed forces of the United States on active federal duty, which comes back to the, I suppose, the home of record issue. Or, mm-hmm. And it says, or the military reserve, which then covers the military reserve. And to make a correction, not that I would correct the esteemed deputy director of the military department, but the fiscal impact statement is based on two ranges. One is the low range, which is $210,000 plus or minus $211,000 in 2007-05, and the high range estimate is the $415,000. And those numbers include the Department of Defense numbers for the entire state of Oregon. That includes all the reserve components, the National Guard, and it also includes a factor, which I can tell you, madam, a factor calculated to determine the number of individuals with Oregon HOMA records that actually come home on leave and go hunting.
Okay, Val, could you come join us, please? I don't want to be stupid, but I bet this is the worst question y'all have ever heard. Where it says the armed forces of the United, I'm sure it means United, States, on active federal duty. Well, if they're on active federal duty,
yes, ma'am.
Where are they in the here?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, the way it reads to me is that an individual would have to be on our definition of active federal duty would be Title 10 status, which means they've been called on to federal active duty, which means they're no longer in Oregon. And one could argue that our active guard reservists and all reserve components have active guard reservists, AGRs is the term, they would qualify under that but they're still under Title 32 status, so I don't know, I'm not sure what the intent was, but I would, if I was reading that, I would interpret it that they have to be on federal active duty, which means they are not here.
They're not here anyway, so
unless you are an active duty person. If you're an active duty person, of course, as Representative Boquist mentioned, you know, in the 30 days leave, maybe during elk season.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As I read J, lines 30 and 31, and then line 1 on the second page, there are three categories of people who qualify for a free hunting license. Those people who are in the Oregon National Guard, those people who are in the Armed Forces of the United States on active federal duty, and those people are in the military reserve. So there's three categories, I imagine.
So the entire United States, every armed force, can come to Oregon and hunt free.
That's what this says.
Yeah, that's my concern.
Now, of course, you have to physically get here.
No, I think we've got a little challenge. I think we're asking a little bit too much of fish and wildlife here.
Madam Chair, the fiscal analysis is done based on HOMA records.
Thank you. Okay,
correct,
so
we would need to do.
Okay, so I'm not crazy.
No, but I think that's literally what it says.
Oh, no, you didn't go that far, did you? Okay, HOMA record, and can we change it to the United States instead of this? We're speaking Spanish here. Unitas, the Armed Forces of the Unitas.
I didn't even see it.
And if you two would look at lines 20 to 23, where are the veterans? I'm just concerned. I went through this as Vice Chair of Agriculture last year or year term before. And, first, I'm always offended that you have, if you're a senior citizen, you have to be 65 and have lived here 50 years. I just think that's so bad. Listen, Barnhart, you're one of 12.
When I get to be 65, Madam Chair, if I stay in Oregon in the intervening years, I'll make it.
And you'll let me go with you.
I mean, 50 years. And then the next one is a senior citizen, 70 years. You have to have lived here 5 years. I don't know, but if you're 65, you have to live here 50 years. Maybe we'll ask them when they come up. But anyway, I'm worried about the disabled war veteran. And I don't know, Val C., on line 23, it says to be at least 25% disabled.
Madam Chair, for the record, I'm Val Conley. I'm with the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. Currently, federal statute or Oregon State statute requires that the veteran be, it says 25%, but the VA rates in increments of 10, so a veteran has to be 30% or more service-connected disabled in order to be entitled to the free hunting and fishing license.
So we may need to correct that one.
It's always read 25, and I don't know why.
Because I've had that question, and I don't know, and I said, I don't know why we have got two different standards.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably another one of your World War II statutes.
Well, it really should read 30% or more.
Okay.
Or 20.
Well, they don't come in 20, do they?
Well, the VA rates in increments of 10. And since the statute says 25% or more, that really means 30%.
30. I know. So it makes us stupid. And then I want to know that lines 24 through 27, as I read this, is this is in lieu of your hunting license. I'm going to have to ask these guys to come forward. But that's how I believe that reads. So where are the rest of the veterans, I want to know?
These are new veterans.
Well,
there's five.
I know. It just seems like we've left them somewhere. I have no clue.
Ma'am, the reference to veterans is, I think, in K, lines 2 through 4 on the second page.
Those are new.
In lines 34 through 36. It only refers to those who retired within the past year.
Okay, well, I think we got to get our veterans straightened out.
Madam Chair, the fiscal will not work. If you add veterans, the present law, which is line 20 to 23, provides a benefit to disabled veterans. Presently, that's 20 to 23 is the existing law.
On page one.
And then 3103 is frank that there are two versions of providing hunting and fishing benefits, license benefits to members of the reserve component, active duty members whose home of record is in the state of Oregon, and reservists whose home of record is in the state of Oregon. And any retiree who retires with a home of record of Oregon the first year. So they're getting one fishing license after retirement as a memorial to being in the service.
Okay.
At that point, I mean, that the fiscal impact between 3103 and the governor's other plan with their own bill fitting out there are very close.
Okay.
And really the only difference, a lot of difference between the two, is who administers the program. Is it more efficient to administer with fish and wildlife and have us
already reserve
money
or
come
home? Okay, let's hear from Chris and Roy very quickly so we can get to the fairgrounds and see how happy you are with us.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Chris Couts, Deputy Director for the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I have Larry Cooper, the Deputy Administrator for the Wildlife Division, with me today. Roy Elliker had another commitment this afternoon.
Roy left us. Okay.
Just a couple of quick comments on House Bill 4103. We did work with the military department and Representative Boquist to identify who would be affected by this bill. And Representative Boquist's previous discussion with you right before we came up
is correct, that we figure about 13,800 people would be eligible under this bill for these free licenses. And
as veterans?
As members of the Oregon National Guard.
As relates to the military.
As it relates to the definitions within the bill that have been...
Not these senior citizens and so forth.
No, okay. This is just relating to the changes within the bill.
Does that include the disabled?
Or veterans? Chair Nelson, no. These figures, again, only include the changes to the bill, which are for the National Guard, those in the armed forces, the reserves, and the retirees.
Okay.
So the
can you afford this?
Excuse me?
Can y'all afford this? If
Chair
we don't
Nelson,
take your lottery money?
Chair Nelson, this is a direct impact on the department's license revenue. That is revenue that supports about 50% of the department's overall funding. It would, as indicated, impact us between $220,000 to up to $550,000 a biennium. That's roughly about 1 to 3 positions, depending on the level of the positions. So we haven't identified which positions we would have to lose as a result of this bill, but that is... That would be a way to understand what the impact of the bill would be.
Madam Chair, there's a follow-up to that. I mean, what we envision, and frankly what we're going to have to do, and I think we've all realized this, is that when and if we pass this bill, is go downstairs to Ag and Natural Resources, Jeff Krupp's committee, and fight to get them the funds to pay for this bill.
Okay.
The bottom line is Fish and Wildlife cannot take this out high. But we know that. And
okay,
likewise,
it's a deal.
And Chair Nelson, the other thing is, as Colonel Caldwell already testified to, there is money set aside in the military department's budget to reimburse these folks for the purchase of their hunting and fishing license, although the person would have to put the money up front and then go to the military department and receive reimbursement, as I understand it now, is kind of what their program is modeled after. Yeah. This one would mean for the folks that are affected by it that they wouldn't have to pay the cost up front if it came to the department, but then it does have the subsequent impact on our revenue stream.
Okay, I can tell right now we're going to have to do a little amending.
Madam Chair, what we need to do is amend the home of record, the residence, to define it down.
And the process with the Caldwell?
Madam Chair, the only thing about process is that's going to come in another bill. That process is not set. So what we're saying with this bill...
We could have an amendment to this one.
To?
The process.
The present process that we figured out is best to serve all the reserves and the veterans retiring the first year goes something like this, and this may be news to them, but this is a discussion between Lindsey Ball and Roy Ellicker and I of how we would do this, is that under this program we could service the reserves, the National Guard, and those people that retired as a memorial for the first year. They would get a free license. They would, for better word, get off the internet their form, fill it out, provide the documentation, which is easy for them, and they would mail the documentation to one of the four regional offices of the Fish and Wildlife, and they would issue them a fishing or a hunting license as it is. That has come to, and I'm speaking quasi on their behalf because I met with, considering all the time with Lindsey Ball and Roy Ellicker, coming up with the most efficient way to do this. And that is...
Would it be possibly money to Colonel Caldwell?
I'd be happy to have another meeting and get these amendments done so we can get this ready and do this in the most efficient. But the key point...
Maybe Larry and Chris. I mean, since it looks like they're the worker bees here to me.
We need to, you know, this is going to have to go to Ag and Natural Resources to get additional funding.
Thank you so much for being here, and I'm sure we're going to see you again. I'm going to close this work session, hearing on this... what number? House Bill 3103. And I'm going to adjourn this meeting. Thank you very much for getting us through this, all of you. And let's all get to. Let's go down. What is it? 7?